Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, hoj här kommer Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, ingen faktiskt, ingen annan Karlsson spelar jag så bra som mig.
Karlsson, Karlsson, Karlsson scores!
Karlsson, Karlsson,
yes! Welcome everybody to another episode of Keeping Karlsson Fantasy Hockey Podcast, the longest running fantasy hockey podcast in the world, hosted by two guys who think it's totally reasonable to be talking about games that are going to be played 8 months from now. This is not a weird obsession that we need help for. I'm your host, Dylan Dubrovsky, and with me today to look at next season's NHL schedule in order to determine if there's anything we need to tweak in our draft strategy to make sure that we play optimally and pick the players who are going to, you know, be in our lineup when we need them. It's not Brian Kahn. Brian is on vacation with his family, but you know him. You love him. He's been a host of Short Shifts for 2-3 years now. It's Jeremy Versillo. Jeremy, welcome back to the show. Remind me, yeah, how long have you been doing shows on Keeping Karlsson at this point?
Honestly, I forget. I think it's probably 3 years, but kind of just all a blur at this point.
Yeah, it's been like forever. Just that's how I think about it. But yeah, I haven't talked to you very much recently because you've gone through a bit of a life change. You were a Seattle guy. You would always come onto the shows and talk about how whatever's going on affects the Kraken. You're not in Seattle anymore.
Unfortunately, no. I had to give up my Seattle Kraken season tickets, and my wife and I made the move across the country to Philadelphia.
Oh.
And so now I guess I'm a Matvei Michkov fan. Got to go to some Flyers games. Ironically, the one Kraken game I'm probably going to go to this year is in Seattle when I'll be home for the holidays, and they're playing Philly.
Oh, that's perfect. Are you planning on becoming a Philly fan? I feel like, you know, Philly's had its issues for sure, but definitely you've got some more stars. I think that it's going to be a lot more fun, like you said, cheering for Michkov over like a Matty Beniers or whoever, I don't know, Shane Wright. Maybe I'm discounting the Kraken, but yeah, you got Konechny. Oh, and newly acquired Trevor Zegras. That'll be fun to go see. Are you going to be getting season tickets like you did for the Kraken?
I won't be getting Flyers season tickets. It's a bit further to get to the games from where we live now, and I think I'm going to still be a Kraken fan. Right now, I'm rooting for the Kraken to get Gavin McKenna, so I'm on Team Tank for this year. Not sure if my fellow Kraken fans agree with me, but I have kind of just given up on this season before it started.
I just feel like Seattle is like not going to be last. They just seem like the perfect team to be probably like outside of the playoffs, but decent enough. Like they just signed every single like third line forward in the league, it seems. Like you look down the lineup, they've got Mason Marchment now. They've got, you know, Kako signed. They've still got Eberle, Chandler Stevenson. I don't know. Like they signed Freddie Gaudreau or traded for Freddie Gaudreau. I'm not sure why. Yeah, like I'm not sure exactly if the high end talent is there, but they don't seem to be bad enough to get McKenna. But I guess anything could happen. They did one thing they did in that direction is they decided to not buy out Philip Grubauer. So that should help at least.
That's true. I definitely don't think they're the worst team in the league this year. They're probably somewhere between bottom five and bottom 10. But at that point, let's roll the dice, get me a couple ping pong balls, and see what kind of luck Gary Bettman can give us.
Yeah, I guess the Islanders weren't the worst, and they got themselves Matthew Schaefer. So I guess anything could happen, like you're saying. All right, well, I would love to just talk about Philly and Seattle. We haven't really had many episodes just kind of talking about teams in general and how we think they're going to do. But we've got you here for a specific reason. Last couple seasons, I guess, I've been doing this show almost every Sunday called Matchup Maximizer, where I look at the schedule for the next week. And then anytime I would not be able to do it, or just I was like, I think this would be a good week for Jeremy. You've stepped in and done an awesome job. You've got that analytical mind. Let's just remind people in general, why do we care about the NHL schedule? I'll give my like high level thoughts, and then you can like fill in some blanks. Like for me, the main things that I think about are like off days, I guess. That to me is like, if you're playing a head-to-head league with bench spots, how it tends to work on a given like busy day, you're going to have some player, like, you know, if every team is playing, you're going to have to put some players on your bench. But if there's a team that's playing, you know, on the light days, like a Wednesday, Friday kind of schedule, that's more useful because you're going to get those games versus adding a free agent that's playing on a busy day where you're already full. So on Matchup Maximizer, we're often looking at teams that have, like, you know, a good week and then also a lot of off days. Now when we're looking, taking a step back from the season, I'm interested to know, like, teams with a lot of off days, but I guess also there's this whole concept of you're going to be looking at, like, who has a good, like, schedule at the start of the season versus the end of the season. Are you playing for, you know, focused on just getting guys that are going to be helpful in the fantasy playoffs? So is there anything else that I'm missing that you focused on when analyzing the schedule?
So you're right. The big thing is off days. That's one of the biggest things. My philosophy when I'm playing Kakupful or any sort of competitive fantasy league where you're streaming players in and out, if I sit anybody who is playing a game on my bench, it is a failed week. Obviously, there are some weeks that's unavoidable. You know, the night of hockey where they have 32 teams playing on a night. But for the most part, I would consider dropping a fringe guy before letting him sit on my bench. Because guess what? If your player's got a three-game week and will sit on your bench for Thursday and Saturday, they've really got a one-game week. And how many players in fantasy hockey would you hold on to through a one-game week? Definitely 100 or so, maybe 150, depending on how many moves your league has and how good your fellow managers are. But there's definitely a lot of times where someone who's not even the worst player on my roster, but still closer to a streamer than to a roster player, is going to sit for 2 weeks straight. And I'm like, nah, get out of here. Give me someone who plays the off nights.
Yeah, that's totally fair. But then I guess the question becomes, why do we care about that now in August? You know, we haven't even drafted our teams yet. And I guess what I've come to realize is when you're drafting your team, you may think, like, well, what's the difference if I draft McDavid, who doesn't have a lot of off days, or let's pretend Colorado had, like, a lot of off days, you know, or McKinnon, who does have a lot. Like, what's it? Like, I'm obviously going to play them both for every game. But I guess you have to take that next step back of being like, if you're deciding between two studs and one of them has more off days, that's just going to give you more opportunities to have days where you have openings on your roster throughout the season so that you will be able to stream someone in, or maybe you will be able to have one of your other players you drafted that if you had McDavid, you'd be benching, I don't know, Alex Tuch. But if you had McKinnon, you would be playing Alex Tuch on that Thursday in November. And who knows if that'll make the difference in that specific week, and it snowballs from there. So it is definitely something to consider. I will say also, I've had some interesting debates with some patrons over the last couple of months about looking at, like, the very start of the NHL season and that whole thing. Like, some people are drafting, like, really wanting to win week one. And I heard an argument. Basically, if you draft good players for week one, then you won't have to be streaming during week one because you already kind of have your streamers as, like, the last few people you drafted. So then you can save all of your ad drops for the first week to be players who have good schedules for week two. And you can kind of just be ahead of the curve and let that just kind of every week give you this advantage. I guess my counterpoint was, you could also just, like, not try so hard on week one. You know, like, either way, like, let's say you didn't draft a good schedule for week one, maybe just don't chase it and still, like, kind of focus your ad drops. Because early in the season, the thing that's what makes streaming interesting, I think, and again, streaming is, like, this idea of, like, the bottom spots on your roster. They're not going to be guys who you're, like, holding all season. And instead, it's players who you're going to be, like, you know, swapping in and out depending on who's going to give you the next good couple of days before you move on to the next person. That's what we call streaming. The idea with streaming early in the season versus later in the season is, early in the season, it's not only, I think, about, like, you're going to be adding players who have that good schedule for the next couple of days. There's still, like, potentially some really good gems in free agency that you're going to add that end up being guys you're going to hold all season. Like, think of, like, Dylan Holloway last year. I don't think he was drafted in many leagues, but then quickly it became apparent that he was going to be a lot more on St. Louis than he was in Edmonton the year before. And you didn't want to have wasted your ads grabbing a Monday, Wednesday, Friday person for week one or week two and then miss out on Holloway, who ended up being an awesome season-long hold. So I do think there's a lot to think about, and you got to use your moves smartly. So that could be a reason maybe to, you know, use the draft to do your streaming early on, I guess. Yeah, and then the other thing I mentioned before is the fantasy playoffs. If you know you're going to get in, you know, this is more like your in the Kakupful. I don't personally draft for the fantasy playoffs. I feel like that's, like, maybe a little bit braggadocious to think that like I'm going to get in so easily that I just need to, you know, but definitely if you're in a league where you're confident you're going to make it, might as well get that edge and get the player who's going to play like 12 times for you over 3 weeks versus 9 times for you. But yeah, Jeremy, where do you want to start with all this? Because we're going to want to give some tangible advice to people here about which teams we're targeting for different objectives.
So you actually basically have led into my first point almost perfectly, which is to use your lovely roster maximizer tool to look at the total game played in regular season and playoffs for various teams. An interesting example I thought I found this year is McDavid versus McKinnon. Edmonton plays 68 games during the fantasy regular season. Colorado only plays 65. That means if you do the math, a 7.0 points per game average for McDavid is actually a 7.32 for McKinnon on total points for your fantasy team.
And should we define what dates you're talking about? You're talking specifically assuming like the Kakupful, which we haven't actually like set up the leagues that yet on Yahoo, but usually how we do it, and I know a lot of leagues do this, is we kind of like skip the final week of the actual regular season. So when you're saying regular season versus fantasy playoffs, do you want to just give us the specific dates you're looking at for this measurement?
Yeah, it goes from the beginning of the season until I believe March 15th is going to be the last regular season matchup. That's when it's going to end. And then the first round of playoffs would be March 16th through 22nd, is my math right there? And then the 23rd through the 30th, and then April 5th is the last day of playoffs. And it cuts off the last 11 days of the season, which Yahoo combines into one big week where there's a whole bunch of shenanigans where players rest for playoffs and a bunch of rookies get a ton of ice time. And it's not really indicative of what your fantasy team was.
Interesting. And so it's interesting then, the point you're making is that the Oilers have more regular season, like fantasy regular season games, than Colorado has more fantasy playoff games, I'd imagine, unless they're like, you know, backloading it all into that week that we're not playing. But is that correct then? Does the math also hold from what you looked at, that Colorado is actually going to be a lot, like McKinnon's going to be a lot more valuable if you make your playoffs than McDavid?
Correct. The Avs play 11 playoff games in 3 weeks, and the Oilers only play 9. And 9 is kind of like my blarg, ugly playoff schedule, because 9 means you only play 3 games each week, which is the low end. Usually it's either 3 or 4. And often when it's 9, it's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, which is no fun.
All right. So then as someone who's, you know, high level competitor in Kakupful, you were in tier 1 last year, are you drafting McDavid or McKinnon based on the, assuming you think they're like equal, all else equal, are you going for the guy that's going to help you more in the regular season, or are you drafting the guy who's going to help you more in the playoffs?
In Kakupful and other competitive leagues, I go for the guy who's going to help me in regular season. I prefer to do make playoffs and roll the dice. Multiple leagues I'm in have promotion and relegation, and use playoffs as the cutoff for getting demoted to another tier. So if missing playoffs gives me a consolation bracket or a chance of demotion, I'd rather make playoffs and see what happens. You can also do, some people swear on drafting the guy for regular season, and then halfway through the season, when they think they've got a good team, trying to trade for the players with good playoff schedules. I don't like doing that much work. I don't like relying on a trade as part of my potential strategy. But yeah, this is where you kind of have a decision point of, do I want to go for a lot of guys with good regular season schedules or a lot of guys with good playoff schedules?
Right. And I guess maybe when you're at McDavid versus McKinnon, like if you have first overall pick, you're probably not, you know, you might want to just like have a few other factors that help you decide. And I think that is a really interesting discussion. lately, like last season, McKinnon was a lot better than McDavid in terms of fantasy points per game, at least in our format. And I should actually give some background again. Like, when we're saying Kakupful, that's the Keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League. It's a league we run through this podcast. I kind of feel like if you're a listener to an episode in August, there's a good chance you've heard of it. But just in case this is your first ever episode, it's got promotion relegation. If you join, if you've never played before, you're going to start at the bottom tier, which is tier 6. And then if you do well, you'll move your way up into eventually potentially being in tier 1 like Jeremy was last year. So it's a lot of fun. And yeah, in our format, definitely McKinnon was the top guy, like more shots on goal. I think also just McDavid had a bit of a down year, mainly from the start of the season when Edmonton was struggling. But also, you know, that's useful like later on. You know, like Zach Hyman is someone, like I've been doing a bunch of mock drafts. By the way, if you're a patron and you haven't, like get in on mock drafts. We're having a lot of fun. I think there's like 10 concurrent mock drafts or something going on right now. And it's like really interesting even just to draft from different places, kind of get a sense of who's going where. And like you get little observations that who knows if it'll hold for the regular season. But I could tell you that Zach Hyman's ADP has been around like 82nd overall, which if I could do some quick math here, we have 14 teams playing. So that would be around like the late fifth round pretty much. Which is like a lot later, you know, a couple years ago, Zach Hyman scored, what was it, 50 plus goals. He was incredible. Then last year was a down year. He got injured in the playoffs. So I think he's like out of people's minds. So if you're saying that Edmonton has this really good regular season, that might be a reason to just, you know, you star some guys like a Zach Hyman, who's already falling a bit in drafts and think, okay, this is a guy that I think is going to do better. If you believe that, which I think I don't see why not at this point. And then also the fact that, yeah, you're getting those extra games. I guess then, could you give us some more of these teams that have like a lot of regular season games versus playoff games? Or is Edmonton like at the top there? Are there a few others on your mind?
So yeah, I can give you a list. And real quick, I just want to say that I mostly use this as a tiebreaker. To me, McDavid versus McKinnon is a total toss-up. I believe last year at one point in like the 4-5 slot, there was a lot of Pasternak versus Kucherov. If I had that draft slot, I would have been looking at the schedule, using it as a tiebreaker. Same thing later on. Like maybe it bumps Zach Hyman a few ranks, but I'm not going out of my way to reach 12 spots for a guy with a good schedule or a bad regular season schedule, good playoff schedule. But into some teams with good regular season schedules, Edmonton, Minnesota, and Toronto have the most regular season games played. The downside is they are all very low on the off nights. They all play 68 regular season games. Washington, on the other hand, plays 68 regular season games and has more off nights than Edmonton, Minnesota, and Toronto. So that's kind of interesting to me.
Okay, Washington is a fun team also because I feel like they generally have a lot of players that you can get kind of later in your draft that could end up having big impacts. Like you look even last year at like a Dylan Strome who had such an incredible season. Dylan Strome had 82 points. I don't know if people are aware of this. He was a point per game player, 29 goals. It's not like he was like just fully assist heavy. The shots were pretty low, gotta say. 149 shots isn't that good. So yeah, he wasn't like, you know, an elite fantasy asset or anything, but I'm looking at the ADPs from our mock draft so far, and I'm seeing like 91 for Dylan Strome. If you believe that he can keep up what he did last year, and I think a lot of that does have to do with Ovechkin, and he's like I'd say like the hardest players to peg for next year that are like the high-end guys. Ovi's got to be up there. Like Landeskog, of course, is another person who's going to be very hard to peg just because he's been missing for a couple years. But like Ovechkin just like scored all those goals, but also, yeah, 44 goals. He was chasing the record. I'm not saying anything that a lot of people haven't said. Like, is he going to be motivated enough is the team going to, maybe it's not even about motivation, but like maybe there were a lot of plays being forced through Ovi. I know definitely when there was an empty net, he was generally scoring on those situations. So yeah. And then if Ovechkin scores fewer goals, then of course that could mean Dylan Strome gets fewer assists. But anyway, Strome, Tom Wilson, Protas had a breakout year. Pierre-Luc Dubois, like Connor McMichael. Like there's a lot of interesting Washington players that you're going to be seeing kind of available to you throughout your draft that I think are all going to be rosterable in a league that's as deep as the Kakupful, where we have
18 man rosters with 14 participants per division. So 18 times 14, I believe, is 252. I think I've named, and then I haven't got, that's not even the defenseman, right? Then you have obviously Carlson and Chychrun who are useful. So that's definitely, yeah, a good thing to know that these Washington guys, when you get to the point where you're deciding between a Washington person and someone else, if you're going to get a lot of regular season games and a lot of off day games, that's going to give you the potential for, yeah, just a lot more points potentially during the regular season and some key weeks.
And then some teams that have quote unquote bad regular season schedules are Colorado, who we mentioned before, Tampa, and San Jose. They all play 65 during the regular season. And I realize you're probably listening to this thinking, 65 versus 68, are you really splitting hairs over that? And the answer is completely honestly, yes, I do. Maybe I am a bit obsessive about this, but these are things that I do look at when I'm planning my draft. I'll give you a sneak peek that San Jose is the only team with both a bad regular season schedule and a bad playoff schedule. I will probably not be drafting a single shark this year, even though I love Macklin Celebrini.
Well, I should say that's very interesting because, and again, I guess my role here is going to be as you give me information, I can sort of just report on what I've been seeing from our mock draft so far. Celebrini going super high. His ADP has been like 41. This is as of a couple days ago. I think we were like, I don't know, 20 drafts in or something. Yeah, by the way, we've been, if you do a mock draft with us, we've been using the draft tool that I've been developing, and Kevin's been feeding me ADP info from mock drafts, which is continuously updating. So you'll always be able to, as you're drafting, kind of get a sense of who's available with the highest ADP there. But yeah, Macklin Celebrini, 41, to put that in perspective, that's like second round, like late, well, no, like late third round, I guess. Like, late second round, 40. Yeah, there's four. Let me do some math. No. 14, then 28. Okay, yeah, no. So late third round. But so maybe my math was wrong then on Hyman. Also, maybe I was a round late. But I think that Celebrini is, people are really excited about him. And for good reason, of course. He's coming off a year where he had 63 points in 70 games as, what, like an 18-year-old. So you'd expect him to only get better. He's taking a lot of shots, like just contributing in those categories that are really useful for us. Plus, you know, Will Smith is here. Like the whole supporting cast, you'd think is excited. So anyways, people are stoked about Celebrini and for good reason. So I guess a little bit of cold water is, unfortunately, if you're taking that swing, as you know, I think if you're going to get him, from what I'm seeing, you're going to have to like kind of take a swing here. Like you might end up, like let me give you a sense actually of who's getting drafted like after him on average. Okay, right now I have it sorted only by San Jose. I'm using my draft tool here to kind of like filter all of this. If Celebrini is going in general 41.4, the next highest ADP, you've got Stützle, Kempe, Jarvis, Scheifele, Caulfield. So, you know, these are like sure thing guys. And I'm not just saying that I think those guys will be better than Celebrini. Like, I think there's a really good chance. But yeah, it is kind of a bummer that if you want to take that swing, you also have to take that hit. So when you're saying bad regular season schedule and bad playoff schedule, I guess that means in those last like 10 days of the actual regular season, San Jose is just stuffing the schedule with like a bunch of meaningless games for us.
Yeah, if my math is right, both San Jose and Seattle actually end the season with 7 games in 11 days or 7 games in 12 days, which all do not fall under our fantasy schedule.
Okay, well, good to know. And San Jose is a team I'm kind of interested in. And again, it depends. Like you said, it is a little bit hair splitting. Like you don't want to go too crazy with what you learn from this episode of the podcast. But yeah, definitely like for tiebreakers, I think it could make a small difference.
Yeah, and like I actually, it's funny that you're saying Celebrini's going late third because I fell into, in multiple leagues last year, the trap of third round Bedard. And part of the reason I was willing to jump on Bedard in the third round last year is because Chicago had a good schedule. And so I'm like, okay, I'm willing to take a chance on this rookie because I think he had a bunch of off nights during playoffs and during the rest of the season and had a pretty good number of games. And that burnt me pretty badly in a couple leagues. So I think I'm even more skeptical of Celebrini here.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's so fun to land that player that's going to have the breakout and you get, you know, you think you're getting a guy who's going to be like a first or second round talent in the third round. It almost feels like a steal. But then you are taking that risk, maybe a high ceiling, high floor. I think a guy this year that maybe falls under that, aside from Celebrini, is also Matvei Michkov, who was competing with Celebrini for the Calder last year before Lane Hutson came in and stole it. I could see Michkov having a monster season. It's a new coach in Philly. Oh, and you're going to be there to maybe see some of these games live. Like, if Tocket likes him, gives him like great minutes and puts him, you know, with Konechny and whoever else. Who's their center? Oh, Zegras. I don't know. Couturier is still around. I drafted Jack Nesbitt in my Dynasty League. So we'll see if in a couple of years he could do anything for me. He fell really far, but that's nothing to do with NHL schedules. But anyways, yeah, Michkov is another person who I think you're probably going to have to reach for if you want to get him, just because I think a lot of people are excited about the potential. But don't forget, last year, like, Michkov also had some struggles, and maybe you could blame it on the coach, but maybe also there's just some growing pains of these 18 or 19-year-olds. So buyer beware. But anyways, I guess I'm veering a little bit away from the schedule, but whatever. It's a midsummer episode. We can sort of talk about a lot of things. Okay, so San Jose, you're saying not the best schedule. How do you factor in goalies when you're thinking of this stuff? Because I almost feel like if the team doesn't have a lot of games, whatever, right? Because like, I care more about if I think my goalie is going to play a lot of the team's games. And then I guess for that also, you look at like back-to-backs as a factor. Like, maybe San Jose is not going to play that many games. Maybe they don't have that many back-to-backs. Because I've been thinking for a while, I think Askarov could be a decent guy to reach for later in your drafts. I know that they got Nedeljkovic, but like, come on, who's Alex Nedeljkovic? He's a backup goalie. Like, I think Askarov really has a chance to be like the Dustin Wolf this season and just kind of come out of nowhere and be super valuable. Even if the team doesn't win like so many games, I could see him being good enough to like even steal more games than you'd expect. But yeah, maybe is that a good transition into talking maybe about back-to-backs, and if you're looking at that when drafting your goalies?
Yeah, so back-to-backs are really only relevant for goalies. And it's funny you mention Askarov in San Jose, because you would think that since San Jose plays less games, they won't have as many back-to-backs. Actually, they're tied for the most back-to-backs over the fantasy schedule.
Mm. Okay, but I will say this. And again, this is like just making an argument where you could just kind of be right no matter what you say. Like, you can make an argument for anything. I think there could be something to be said about a goalie playing fewer games and then maybe that leading to them having a better season just because they don't get worn out. Like, the fact that Askarov will be able to rest on these back-to-backs and he'll be like ready to play, you know, maybe he'll end up with a higher save percentage. Maybe that's the kind of thing where you're thinking if you're in a categories league, because the thing is with a points league, you really just like a couple, you really just want to get that volume from your goalies. Like, yeah, it sucks when they have a bad game every once in a while, but in general, getting like 5+ more games from one goalie over another will likely lead to like more fantasy points if they're like somewhat similar in quality. But in a categories league, it might also be the opposite. Like, it might be like, oh, now I'm more interested in Askarov because I think he has a better chance of having a high save percentage because he'll play fewer games because of the increased number of back-to-back. So it's pretty wild what you could convince yourself about when looking at the NHL schedule.
That's true. I don't disagree with that logic. I'm generally a goalies are black magic type of person. My advice for drafting goalies is draft the goalies you like. Don't draft the ones you don't like. I do have one goalie note I made in the entire research I did for this, and that is the team with the least back-to-backs is actually Winnipeg, which means Connor Hellebuck will get his full schedule of games. I mean, he's played between 62 and 65 games for like 4 years straight. I don't think he's playing 70. That just doesn't happen anymore. But I would be very confident in Connor Hellebuck getting, you know, 63, 64, 65 games.
Yeah. And it's like, on one hand, you would think like, you know, every single season in the playoffs, Hellebuck doesn't do as well. I wonder if Winnipeg is like, sure, it's fun to be one of the top teams in the regular season, but if we keep getting bounced early in the playoffs, is it really worth it? Maybe we should change something and maybe play Hellebuck in fewer games and see if that makes a difference. I think on the other hand, it's like, that probably isn't going to happen. And probably he'll just, like, he was like the best goalie in the league last year. So clearly, I think it's like maybe simplistic to just be like, oh, clearly they just lost in the playoffs because Hellebuck was tired from playing too many games. Like, I think that's probably not even the case. I know a lot of people were talking about how like Who was the team that beat them? Dallas, right? Like, Dallas was able to really target, like, the specific style where Hellebuck excels, and, like, they knew how to exploit, like, Winnipeg's defense. Anyway, something like that, you know? So maybe it didn't even have to do with the fact, and maybe that's just happened in the playoffs when teams play against Winnipeg many days in a row, and it's usually, like, a really talented team that's a playoff team playing against Winnipeg in the first round. They're able to sort of, like, figure out a way to get by Hellebuck when in the regular season they can't. So I think odds are, I'm going to agree with you, and Hellebuck's going to play a ton of games, and he's probably going to do really well because he's Connor Hellebuck. I'm actually doing a mock. I decided to try out first overall. I just wanted to see like kind of how that plays out, especially because, Jeremy, I don't know if you've heard, because I know you've been traveling and busy, but we've got a new draft format for this year, which Brian and I explained, the balanced draft, where basically it's going to be round one goes 1 to 14, and then every other round goes 14 to 1. And the main reason we gave for that, well, we actually had three reasons. I'll just like really quickly say, just because I think it's interesting. But like, the first point is that the first like few guys in the past few seasons that get drafted, like you're like McDavid, Dreisaitl, MacKinnon, you know, Kucherov, Pasternak, whatever. They tend to have like so many more fantasy points than who you're getting at the end of the first round, that even though you have now this disadvantage of every other round picking last, still the difference between what you got in your first round pick versus the late first round picks, like that's higher than adding up all the differences between like first and the second round versus last and second round, first and the third round versus last and the third round. So there was that. Then there's the other added benefits of the annoying things about snake drafts being that if you're on one of those turns, you have to wait so long between picks, which makes it really hard to predict if there's going to be like a goalie run or a D run. So you might have to reach for like a defenseman early because you're going to be waiting like 28 picks before you go again. You don't want to get burned. This way, it's just going to be every 12 picks or every 14 picks, you're up again. You know, easy to sort of like plan things out. Also, like our third reason we gave was just like kind of, it's more like fun, I guess. You don't have to wait. Like, every time you get a pick, it's exciting. So it's nice if you get like your 18 picks versus if you're in a snake draft and you're on the turn, you're kind of only making like, you're making two at a time every time you go, but you're kind of only making 9 picks. You only get 9 of those jolts of like, oh, it's my turn. This is exciting. Anyways, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, I wanted to try out first overall just to see what it's like to have my like top guy and then have to wait. I took McDavid first overall in this mock. It's ongoing right now. We're only in the sixth round. So then I had to wait a long time, which would be the same as in a snake draft. I ended up getting sniped. I was thinking maybe Tage Thompson would fall to me at the end of the second. I ended up taking Matt Boldy with that pick. You know, I like him a lot. We'll see if he's worth last in the second round. But then, yeah, waiting again all the way to my third round pick, a lot of big names got taken in that third round that I thought maybe would fall to me, like your Jesper Bratz, Braden Point, like Stützle, JT Miller, Celebrini, like I mentioned, got taken. So I ended up taking Hellebuck, and I didn't even know about this schedule thing, but I figured like at this point, like none of like the really super high-end forwards that I was hoping to get are still out there, so why not just try the top goalie? And normally I don't reach for a goalie that high. But yeah, I got Hellebuck in round three, and then I ended up taking Wyatt Johnston at the end of round four, and then Dylan Larkin at the end of round five, and that's where I stand right now. Probably I should start thinking about defense at some point. But yeah, I think that potentially I would feel better. Like, this isn't a real draft, it's just a mock draft, so who knows? But like, what you're telling me does make me feel better about having Hellebuck, which I know in our format, in some formats, people are like, how did Hellebuck even fall that far? Goalies are like gold. But in a couple, you know, the fact that goalies don't play every game and it's a volume league, like, the goalie has to be like really good to make him, you know, worth having over a similar skater, just because the skater like generally plays every game of the season. Though it sounds like you're saying Hellebuck has a good chance of playing, if not every game, a huge chunk of them, because Winnipeg has the least number of back-to-backs. So sorry, long ramble there. What do you have next for us?
I think we should go into good playoff schedules coming up, because there's some interesting teams there. The Rangers have the best playoff schedule, which is 12 games played, so four all 3 weeks, including 9 light days. And to be clear, I am using 22 as my light day threshold. I believe your sheet defaults to 18. I've found in the past that 22 works best because we have 2 utility slots. I've never really had an issue fitting all of my forwards into my lineup on a day where 22 teams play.
Okay, I'll just change the sheet. Like, The default was so arbitrarily picked. It's if you go to, yeah, the sheet that you're talking about, keepingcarlson.com/tools, you can go there. And it's just a spreadsheet I made to help you like figure out the schedule. But yeah, it's all configurable. But also there's like great stuff like Frozen Tools has a schedule analyzer, which is maybe a little more easier to work with than a Google sheet. So, you know, your mileage may vary. But yeah, I'm fine to say. But okay, so you're saying we're considering a light day, 22 or fewer games. Good to know. And now you're telling me, you're talking now about teams that have good light day schedules in the fantasy playoffs specifically in those 3 weeks. Afterwards, I still want to also know more teams that have good light day schedules overall for the regular season. But okay, let's start in the playoffs and then we'll work backwards from there.
For playoffs, two other teams that look really good, Boston and Pittsburgh are the other teams that play 12 playoff games. Boston
other,
plays
four. Sorry, who was the other? Who's the first one?
The Rangers.
Okay, so Rangers, Boston, Pittsburgh. Okay.
Boston also plays the four games each week like the Rangers do. Pittsburgh has a schedule I have never seen for the fantasy playoffs, which is four games during the first week, three games during the semifinal week, and five games during the championship week. It is a busy championship week with like 26 and 28 teams playing Thursday and Saturday. So I think you do lose some of the benefit of that because it's just going to clog up your roster. But there could be some interesting Penguins if you want to draft for your playoffs instead of your regular season.
Yeah, I guess the only rub is like who's going to still be on the on the Penguins come your fantasy playoffs. Like there's been rumors about Rust and Raquel and Erik Karlsson potentially all being on the trade block. The way Malkin and Letang looked last year, I don't know if they'd be getting into your lineup on these 26 teams playing days anyways. So I guess it could be a reason. If you're really confident in yourself, get Crosby, and you're going to get five Crosby games in your finals. But of course, you've got to make it. But I wonder if aside from him, and even isn't it kind of possible that Crosby, you're in Pennsylvania now. What's the vibe? Like, I know Crosby's like Penguin for life, all of that. But if they suck, like, and he could, and you know, he could be like, I'm helping the team, right? Like, he helps them get like some team trades like three firsts or whatever it takes to get Crosby for their playoff run. I could see it. I don't know. We'll see how bad they are this season. I have Rutger McGroarty in my dynasty. I hope he'll be good, but I'm not drafting
should at least
him.
He should at least be on the team this year. I suspect he'll play, you know, a full season worth of games.
Yeah, and Koivunen is another fun prospect. So there's reasons to pay attention to the Penguins. They'll be interesting. But I don't know if I'm going to be drafting them for this incredible five-game finals week, just with the uncertainty of who's even going to be on the team come that point. But okay, so you said Pittsburgh, and then what was it? Rangers and Boston. Like all three teams that like didn't make the playoffs last year and like recently have been really great teams. And so you're going to be able to get some value, I think. Like, you know, Artemi Panarin was generally a first-round pick for the last couple fantasy seasons. I think he's been falling. Yeah, I can bring up his ADP for our mock draft so far. But yeah,
where's JT Miller going?
Yeah, okay, so I've got 21.4 for Panarin. So that's like going to be mid-second round. And then JT Miller, we're looking at like late third, like 32.7. And then Adam Fox also going really far back, 50 ADP. So again, this is, if it's a 14-team league, 50 is going to be, let's see if I can do this correctly this time. That's 3.5. So I think that means we're talking middle of the fourth round to get Adam Fox. So if you can make your fantasy playoffs, these are the types of guys that are falling that you might be able to get in your second, third, fourth round, and then you're going to have a big advantage if you think the Rangers can bounce back and all these guys can have better seasons. Artemi Panarin last year in a couple fantasy points per game, 5.64. The year before, 7.3. So it's a huge difference. Like people who were taking Panarin in the first round last year were like sorely, sorely disappointed. And in terms of real life numbers, he went from 120 points to 88. So a huge bummer. Still good, 88 points in 80 games, but he's going to be a tough guy to peg. There's a lot of tough guys I feel like this year. Like honestly, like if you have the last pick in the first round, like in this mock draft that I was just telling you about that I've been doing now where I took McDavid first, it went, I'm curious just to get your thoughts, Jeremy, if you kind of agree with this. Or here, I'm going to tell you the first round, okay? It went McDavid, McKinnon, Kucherov. That's kind of interesting. Kucherov third. Okay, Makar, Matthews, Pastrnak, Draisaitl. I don't know how Draisaitl fell to seventh. That seems pretty good. Though, of course, I have to say then who I think should have been ahead of him. I think I got to take Draisaitl ahead of Pastrnak. Matthews is tricky also, to be honest, with Marner gone. It's questionable like what he'll do. Maybe he'll be just as good or better because he had a bit of a down year. Okay, then Kaprizov, Jack Hughes, Brady Tkachuk. So we're already getting to the point now, 9th, 10th overall. I feel like it's starting to be like, I'm not so sure. Like, obviously great players, but, you know, Jack Hughes, he gets injured a lot. Like, that's risky. Brady Tkachuk, he had a down year last year. This is he's like solid and consistent, but, is he going to be first round value? Maybe not. Jack Eichel, injury prone. We'll see. Mikko Rantanen, new team. He looked good in the playoffs. Okay, then 13th was Zach Werenski, and then 14th was Kyle Connor, who had a great breakout last year, but before that, he was generally more of a second, third round guy. And then, yeah, then if I continue into the second round, it was like Quinn Hughes, Philip Forsberg, Mitch Marner, Nylander. So I feel like even though like first overall now we're giving more of a disadvantage to with having, you know, last pick in every subsequent round, it is like good. Like if you get lucky and you nail it, you know, Kyle Connor is as good as he was the previous year, and you got him like 14th and took Quinn Hughes 15th, and both of them are like just as good. You're like feeling great. But yeah, anyways, this isn't a schedule question, but do any of those players, I don't know, what's your general thought on like the end of the first round? Like if you had 14th overall and you knew you were getting 14, 15 and a couple this year, like do you have a sense of who you'd be targeting with those picks, or is it too early for you at this point?
Too early for me. I honestly don't really start mock drafting until about a week before my first draft.
How dare you?
Yeah, it's late by a lot of people's standards, but I prefer to watch the preseason line shuffles play out the longest I can. I like to know my draft slot before I spend a bunch of time drafting for every possible decision. I will say, when you were reading that list of the first round, I feel like after Kaprizov is where it gets into there's a lot of options type of territory. Like, I think up until Kaprizov, I think all of those players should go in your top, what was it, eight?
That was eight, yeah.
I feel like if you're drafting someone else in the top eight, I may be intrigued by what you're doing, and like those eight aren't necessarily in a set order. But then starting at nine, sounds like there's a bunch of different options that are totally reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Another big option that probably would go there generally would be Matthew Tkachuk, but word has come that he might end up having surgery and missing like 2 or 3 months. Plus, then there's going to, even if he does come back in time for the Olympics, we saw what happened last year at the Four Nations. Like, I don't want to jinx anything, but who knows if he like gets hurt at the Olympics or plays too hard, misses more time. Florida, you know, just uses the LTIR game, gets some awesome trade deadline acquisition before bringing him back for the playoffs. So, yeah, that's obviously high reward potential for Matthew Tkachuk, but he's going to fall. Actually, well, let me see where Matthew Tkachuk went 22nd overall in this mock draft. But okay, we were talking about the schedule. Listeners, if you're like, I want more schedule, less, I don't know, player analysis. I don't know, I'm sorry. We're doing our best here, but we'll get to everything. Jeremy's got lots of time. So you were talking about playoff schedules, right? So we were talking about the Rangers, Boston, and another team that you were saying have the best.
Pittsburgh,
right. I guess we didn't say anything about Boston. Boston's another, like, one of these really interesting teams where it's like, what is going to happen next year? Because it seems like they have, like, nobody really outside of Pastrnak. One guy, I guess, like, I'm intrigued by is Charlie McAvoy, just because he missed so much of last year that I feel like he's kind of, like, forgotten. He's going to fall far. And he also, like, in the games he did play, he was pretty weak. He only had a 3.87 fantasy points per game in Kakupful last season, which was super low. The couple years before that, he was, like, a lot better. So maybe fully healthy Charlie McAvoy could end up being, like, a bit of a draft steal. And then, so yeah, and if you're drafting for playoffs, that could be a reason to just, like, I don't know. I don't want to say move him up, because there's definitely also the chance that he's just like going to struggle because Boston's going to struggle to score goals because they don't have any depth. Like, who's the next best guy to draft after Pastrnak or McAvoy? Like, and Swayman, I guess, if you want to go with him. Like, then you're looking at like Morgan Geeky, Elias Lindholm, Pavel Zacha. I don't know. Do you know that Victor Arvidsson now? He's there. We'll see if he like has anything left. Casey Mittelstadt. Remember Hampus Lindholm? He had a moment where he was good. I don't even know if he's healthy. I don't even know if he's going to play. But anyway, Boston might be a tricky one. But I don't know. I'm eyeing McAvoy. I don't know if I'm going to end up drafting him. I'll be curious to see how he does in the preseason. But I think he's like a player that could get forgotten. And then you could, and you know, it's always tough, especially if you're like in this mock draft I'm talking about. I haven't taken a D yet. I'm five rounds in. Maybe by the time it comes to my pick at the end of the sixth round, if a bunch of D are taken, so far already 15 defensemen have been taken and McAvoy is still available to me. So maybe at some point it's got to get someone. Might as well take the top guy in Boston. But okay, back to you. So those were some good playoff schedules. Do you have any more playoff stuff or do you want to go to regular season now?
I'll kind of rapid fire them at you. A couple more good ones, Colorado, Carolina, Chicago, New Jersey. Some bad ones. We already talked about Edmonton and Minnesota and Toronto. I mentioned that when they had the good regular season schedules. It's definitely a bit of a trade-off. The teams with good regular season schedules usually have bad playoff ones and vice versa.
Okay.
Seattle and Utah also have bad playoff schedules.
Yeah, so I guess I can go into players there, but I think the thing I'm kind of most interested in now is like, what if I just want to do like across the board, like decent, you know, like in terms of like off day games, I think that's like something I always like to focus on. Generally, Anaheim is the team that just has the best, most off day games throughout the year. I guess it's because of, what is the reason even? I even forget. I learned something. It's like the basketball team plays on the busy days. And so then they play on the other days or something like that. Or maybe them in LA like have a thing and they don't want to play on the same day. Is it that? I don't know. But either way, is it again the case this year where Anaheim is our best off day team?
I have a list of four pretty good off day teams based on the criteria I was using as light days. It's not exactly off days. It's days with less than 22 teams play.
Right.
But it's Anaheim, Chicago, Utah, Washington, which if I remember correctly is very similar to what last year was. I believe Utah/Arizona usually has good off nights, and so does Chicago and Washington. That has to be media markets and research and other teams or events that go on in those areas. But yeah, those are the ones that are pretty good.
Yeah, and this is where it gets tricky, right? Like Anaheim, like we have to just start with them because every year it's like Anaheim guys have great like schedules. Like you're going to get a lot of like light day games, which could lead to like a lot more roster flexibility. But then it's also like, but these Anaheim guys are so hard to peg. Like, there's no like sure things. Like last year, I remember I took Troy Terry, I don't know, 10th round or something. I don't know. He was fine, but you know, he wasn't like awesome. Like there were times throughout the season, I'm not going to lie, where I was like, maybe should I like be holding Troy Terry? I ended up holding him and like, he was good. But like, you know, you look at like Jackson Lacombe, he actually has the highest ADP of Anaheim right now in our mock drafts, believe it or not. I guess at some point you need a D. Cause if you think about like which forwards, like, yeah, there's like a lot of like exciting young forwards that could be great. Like Cutter Gauthier at some point is going to be great. Mason McTavish, Leo Carlson, but none of them feel like sure things in fantasy for this year. You have Chris Kreider, who they just signed, like, or traded for. Like, we'll see if
Granlund,
he can do, like,
too.
Oh, yeah, Granlund. Like, I just feel like it's really hard to predict. Like, Vetrano. I think Vetrano is really good. Like, he had 4.5 couple points per game last year, which is solid. Like, that's rosterable. And so, yeah, it's fun. Like, if you can get a couple of these Anaheim guys, just there's going to be a season coming soon, I think, where they're all going to like really break out and be awesome. Because I think this team has like all these like exciting young players. I think like maybe the one guy I'm like most interested in could be a Lukasz Dostal, just because now with John Gibson out of the picture, who's the backup now? Oh, they got Mrazek. Okay, but Mrazek's a backup at this point. I think Dostal is their starter. And with goalies, I feel like oftentimes, like in Kakupfel and in most leagues, you have two goalie spots, right? So I think like Dostal could be a really good guy to grab if you're planning on, if like let's say you're in your draft, let's say like my draft, I got Hellebuck. Then let's say like later on, it's like a few rounds later, and I'm like, man, this is like too good. This value, like I can't pass on like Sorokin any longer. Like I'm just gonna, like I know that I already have Hellebuck and maybe I don't need to like load up on goalies, but I gotta take Sorokin here. He's fallen to like round 8, round 9. I'm just gonna do it. And then once you get then to like round like 13-14, I don't know how far Dostal is gonna fall, but you know, you might be at a point where like normally you wouldn't really be prioritizing taking a third goalie because it's gonna mean that there's gonna be a lot of days where you're just benching a goalie while he's playing, right? Because you already have two goalies. But if you could get like a light day goalie like Lukasz Dostal, maybe you're going to get like a lot more games than you would from any other third goalie you get, just because he's playing on those days when your Sorokins and your Hellebuck aren't playing. So something to consider. Obviously depends on your league format. Who are the other teams with the good light day schedule? You said Washington, who I've already kind of talked through. I believe you said Chicago was one of them, right?
Yes. Real quick on Anaheim, you were mentioning the off-night goalie, Dostal. I do like that strategy because I find that sometimes for stretches of seasons, I fall into a third startable goalie. You know, whether there's an injury and I happen to be holding the backup from a stream at that time, or if someone comes out of nowhere, you know, an Askarov or another rookie, maybe Jesper Wallstedt finally makes his break this year. I definitely hate ending up with a third goalie and all of a sudden not wanting to drop them, but also never being able to start all three. And so having the heavy off-night goalie mitigates the damage of if you happen to find a third goalie, or if you like streaming goalies on Saturdays, that's always really nice.
That's actually a really good point. I was thinking of it like draft three goalies and one of them be Dostal. But you're right, even if you only draft two goalies, you might think, what's the point of having a good off-day goalie? I'm only drafting two. I'm going to get all their games anyways. But yeah, if you end up landing on a good free agent that you want to hold, this gives you the flexibility to get their games. That's a really good point. Chicago, I guess, yeah, it does come back to like last year, like you said, Connor Bedard. Is it going to be a once bitten, twice shy situation? I feel like Bedard now, his ADP in our mock draft so far has been 65.9. It's kind of funny how it was like last year, everyone was reaching for Bedard. Now this year, everyone's reaching for Celebrini. I wonder if like next year now Celebrini is going to, I almost feel like it's like likely Celebrini is going to have a lower ADP next year than this year. Like as good as he'll be, like, is he really going to be able to meet this expectation of getting drafted that high? But now Bedard maybe becomes kind of a value guy because, okay, 65th. So that's divided by 14. That's yeah. So around like middle of the fifth round here. He has right wing eligibility also on Yahoo right now, for what it's worth. Center right wing. We've got the latest position eligibilities that Jay Brew pulled for me that I put into our draft platform. So that's something. You get right wing Bedard. I don't know why he has that. But this guy is a stud, right? And he had a rough second year, but maybe he's learned. You'd hope that maybe, I don't know, like if Chicago really has anyone better for him to play with, he'll probably just play with the same guys. Like I know they acquired Andrei Burakovsky, but you know, they have Frank Nazar, maybe a year older. Maybe he's like, you know, Ryan Donato, I guess, like he was good. We'll see if he can keep up what he was doing. Teuvo Teravainen was okay. So I don't know, but like maybe Bedard is just good enough, you know, to step forward and learn from whatever, you know, train extra hard this summer. I definitely wouldn't be surprised if Bedard ends up being a good pick. So it's nice to know that you get that a little extra bonus if you decide to go for him, maybe not round three this year, but you know, you're looking at him round five, he's still there. Maybe you get, take a shot and you're getting that good off day schedule. So that's good. And then Utah, I mean, they have so many exciting players. So that's like, that's not very hard. That's just like makes it more fun. You know, when you're getting your Clayton Keller, your Dylan Ganther, Sergachev on D, Paterka, who they've acquired, Logan Cooley. Like I'm already excited to draft all these guys. The one player on Utah that I'm lower on this year than I have in previous years is Nick Schmaltz, just because I wonder if he gets bumped from the top power play with the acquisition of Paterka. But that's total guessing. Like you said, Jeremy, it's probably better just to wait until the preseason and learn something, because we'll find out what their plan is for that top power play.
They definitely have more good players than can fit on a power play one unit, so someone's going to devalue because of it.
Yeah, my guess would be Schmaltz, just because, like, what, are you going to trade and sign, like, Paterka just to, like, not play him on the top power play? But I don't know.
To play devil's advocate there, though, one of the things teams like to do on power plays is have two guys who are good at faceoffs on their power play unit in case, you know, Cooley gets kicked out of the draw, then you get Schmaltz taking it instead of having, you know, Keller trying to win a faceoff.
Okay. In that case, yeah, maybe Paterka is a risk, but like you said, Utah good. You said that Utah's a bad playoff schedule, so that's something to keep in mind, but also Maybe, yeah, it's just, I love getting these players with good off day schedules because it just makes everything so much easier. Like, I love looking at my next week's schedule when I'm deciding like who I'm going to stream in or who I'm going to go for in free agents and just knowing like, oh, I have an opening on Thursday, even though there's 24 teams playing. Oh, this gives me like so much more opportunity. Like, I can grab this guy that maybe other people aren't going to grab because we didn't even mention him on Matchup Maximizer because he doesn't have the best streaming schedule. But for my particular situation, he actually does fit in because I have Bedard and Genther and, you know, Dylan Strome on my team, and so, and they're all not playing Thursday on that day, so on that week. So it's yeah, there could be some value there. So it's good to know that these are the teams that we want to target. And then, did you mention yet like the teams that have like the worst schedules in terms of off days, where it's just like they're always just going to be playing on the busy days pretty much?
I haven't, but those teams are Edmonton, Montreal, Nashville, Ottawa, San Jose, and Seattle. So San Jose has like three strikes against them at this point. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be drafting San Jose players.
Yeah, I mean, if he falls far enough, I'm taking Celebrity. Don't get me wrong here. But I also am kind of interested if you're going to be fading D. Don't forget, if you fade a position, then the kind of the schedule doesn't matter as much because you're just like getting all their games anyways. Like if you, let's say, only draft four defensemen, they're like even harder than goalies, I think, to stream in a good one that ends up being like a season long hold. I don't know. Klingberg, could he do? Like, I just think like San Jose is, this is dumb, right? Like, don't reach for Klingberg. But if he's there, like, I'm not leaving Klingberg undrafted, I don't think. Like, I feel like D's so hard to come by. If he's gonna, I think like there's just no one else. Who's the top power play? Like, it's clearly Klingberg. We saw what Wallman did last year. Not that Wallman and Klingberg are the same players, but Wallman got top power play on San Jose. And he was like pretty valuable until he got traded to Edmonton. Klingberg, I think, is gonna have that job. It's not gonna be Orlov. It's not gonna be.
Remember, they ran the five forward power play for a significant portion of last year.
But I think that was because they traded Wallman and they just didn't have anybody. Like, why did they sign Klingberg if not to give him that job? Like, that would be like a huge. I mean, obviously, if he sucks, then he sucks. But like, I feel like at least the plan going into it is, and you know, you look at the names, like, okay, so you're going to have Klingberg with Celebrini, Toffoli, Will Smith, and Eklund. Like, I'm sorry, that sounds good. That sounds like a really good top power play. So. He's someone to look at, but like you said, so maybe not the best schedule, but maybe it won't matter if you don't have a lot of D anyways. It doesn't matter if it's off day games or light day games if you only are rostering 4D for 4D spots.
I usually don't care about schedule for defensemen. Like you said, if you're rostering 4D, you can fit them all. If you're rostering 3D like I often do, you can fit them all.
Right.
Even if you're rostering 5, the odds are one of them will be off that day.
Yeah, that's a good point. Did you know that Jeff Skinner is on San Jose? Did we even talk about that on the podcast? I don't even remember. Probably not. I feel like this is a guy who like benched on Edmonton in the playoffs. Could be like top sixer. Because like I mentioned those other forwards, right? Celebrini, Toffoli, Eklund, Will Smith. Who's the next best forward on the team? Because that's only four forwards for six top six spots. You'd think. They also have Philip Kurashev from Chicago. He's there. Over and so maybe that's your top six. I don't know who else is there, unless like another one of the young guys like Cam Lund. I don't know. Wasn't Michael Misa potentially gonna? I think Michael Misa signed a contract, so maybe he'll make the team. That'll take one of the spots potentially.
If I remember correctly, he's staying with his OHL team and not going to college, so he could get that 9-game sample, and if he's good enough, they could keep him, right?
Yeah. All right. So then there we go. So we have our top teams, our bad teams for off days. You've given us playoff schedules. Any other tidbits you have to throw at us, Jeremy, for the schedule for the upcoming season? Maybe generic draft strategies that you are planning to go with that maybe you haven't shared yet?
Honestly, I haven't really looked into draft strategies for this year yet. That's something I'll be doing through September mostly. I will say I noticed that the Los Angeles Kings start with a back-to-back on the first two days of the season. So, if you want to fill your 16th, 17th, and 18th round with streamers, go find the Kings. I feel like they have some pretty nice options when it comes to that. Alex Laferriere may not get drafted until late, stuff like that.
Okay, I've got the week one schedule up right now. So the first week of the season, it starts Tuesday. There's no games Monday. And then it looks like a very interesting week, actually. So might as well, yeah, when you get into your draft, you want to just focus on guys that are going to help you win that first week. It's basically a really busy Thursday, a busy Saturday, and then almost nothing on the other days. And actually, no games on Friday. So it's really only a 5-game week. And even on those other days, Tuesday has 3 games, Wednesday has 4 games, and Sunday has 1 game. So yeah, you're definitely going to want to focus on teams that play... Well, like you said, you could do LA, who plays 3 times, but it's Tuesday, Wednesday, then you just drop before the Saturday. On the Saturday, everybody plays. Did I mention that? 32 teams playing on the Saturday. Almost everyone plays on the Thursday, 28 teams playing. If you look at just the number of games every team is playing, there's only one team that plays 4 times. That's the Rangers, playing Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. So you could potentially fit in. So yeah, I guess it'll be, in terms of light days, it's the same as LA. If you're getting a Tuesday, Wednesday from LA or a Tuesday, Sunday from the Rangers, those might be teams. I guess also Washington, I'm seeing, goes Wednesday and then Saturday, Sunday. So you can get 2 games from them. So yeah, that is always a fun strategy. Yeah. So at the end of your draft, I guess those are the teams you're going to be targeting. And I guess you could go the thing with like the LA Tuesday, Wednesday, I get what you're saying, Jeremy, but just at the same time, again, like I just feel like those moves early on are so valuable. I don't know if I want to like particularly have that strategy of like, okay, I'm going to like draft my king and then I'm going to use a move on Wednesday to grab, I don't know. I guess a good move could be to then grab a Washington guy. Or no, sorry, it's Tuesday, Wednesday. So then like drop the Thursday person to get a person who plays Sunday or whatever. You know, like it's just like I might want to just save my moves to like focus on the next week or to focus on like, but yeah. No, point taken, and definitely, yeah, it'll be useful to look at that first week. And yeah, so again, the teams to maybe focus on to get the most games for that first week are, once again, the LA Kings, the New York Rangers, and the Washington Capitals. I guess we could just talk through some of the players on those teams that might be available like late in your draft. I guess you kind of got us started there with LA and bringing up Alex Laferriere, who just signed a new contract. I guess other people that might go late, Andre Kuzmenko is someone who they got late in the season and he ended up jumping on the top power play. So I think he could be interesting. I also wonder if like Drew Doughty's just going to fall far in drafts. Though he might be someone once you draft, you just hold, even though he might be kind of mad. LA also was a team that did 5 forward power play even when Doughty was back for a little bit. So that's definitely something to keep in mind.
You could possibly get like a Brent Clark if it looks like they are giving Clark the power play. Like I doubt he gets drafted. He's kind of post hype.
And then over on the Rangers, a late pick to target. I mean, one idea is Alexis Lafreniere. I don't know how far this guy is going to fall. He's coming off a really like blah season, definitely. We're talking, what was it, 45 points in 82 games. Like, not rosterable. Like, the only reason you were holding him was just hoping something will change at some point for our former first overall pick from a few years back. Maybe this is the year. Like, so maybe he might be a fun guy, actually, to just take late in your draft because... you take the swing, hope it goes well, and if it doesn't, at least he has a good week one schedule, and then you just move on before week two. So I think that's actually the perfect kind of guy to grab if he's still out there in like 15th, 16th round. Grab Lafreniere, even though he's coming off such a down season, if he falls that far. Will Cooley, I guess, is another guy who like he might not even fall that far, depending on your format, because he was like really solid last year with all of his hits, over 300 hits last year. But yeah, and then who was my third team here? It was the LA Kings, the New York Rangers.
Washington.
And Washington. Okay, so I already mentioned a bunch of Washington guys, but I guess I was talking about the higher end Capitals, a Capitals player that might fall later. You know what?
Anthony Pavilje?
Nah. I mean, I doubt. I mean, like, he'll be there. I agree with that.
That's what I'm
sure. Well, okay. I mean, if we're just saying guys who are going to be there, then you could also grab... Martin Fehervari or Nick Pavilje
was playing first line minutes for him though.
Was he? Okay. So I guess we'll see in training camp. We'll see if there's reason to be excited. I would expect the top 6 to have some combination of Ovi, Strom, Tom Wilson, Dubois, McMichael, Protas. That's 6 players. I think that's probably the 6 forwards I'm interested in on Washington, and I feel like all of them might get taken before we're in the last few rounds.
Ryan Leonard, maybe. He could be interesting.
Yeah, he makes the team, yeah.
Yeah, but like third line guy with some hits and some scoring upside.
That's a good point. Yeah, I would take a chance. If he makes the team, I'll take a chance on him because like they could always do the 9 game. Like maybe they'll want to give him a chance, see what he has, or put him with like a Ovechkin. Yeah,
honestly, he may not be around in that that 15th round or 16th round if he makes the team.
Yeah. Also, Shams is correcting me. Like, yeah, maybe the good thing about taking that LA player who plays Tuesday, Wednesday, I was kind of poo-pooing the idea. But no, like, totally right. He's saying the nice thing about drafting a streamer like that is you have that spot ready to pick up the interesting player. So you get those first 2 days of data, and maybe there's already, then you have that spot available to, like, maybe on the busy first Thursday of the season during the games, you have, like, that open spot ready to go to snatch the player who surprisingly has a hat trick that no one drafted. So, yeah, that's a good point. Okay. Well, with that, yeah, it sounds like, Jeremy, you've given us everything you have from all your research for the schedule for the upcoming season. Like Jeremy said, if you want to have more info about the schedule, I would recommend the schedule tool on Frozen Tools. You just go to frozenpool.daubersports.com. It's not a paid advertisement, by the way. And then you can go into Schedule Planner and like you can kind of, they have tools there. But I still use my spreadsheet. So I like it personally. If you go to kevincarlson.com/tools, if you're decent enough, I tried to make it pretty friendly. Like you just have to basically make your own copy. Then you can play around, change some thresholds. I did a thing called a roster maximizer where you can, as you're drafting, kind of like put in which teams you've drafted players from, and then it'll tell you from all the like other teams and like all the teams in the league, basically, like which teams you'll get the most games from during a certain time span, like assuming, like considering the players you've already drafted. Maybe that's like sounds like gobbledygook to a lot of people listening, but though I guess it's really hardcore people. It's the uber nerds here in the middle of August thinking about the schedule. So yeah, check it out. I'll link to it in the show notes. Jeremy, anything you want to shout out, I guess, going into you know, a couple months before the regular season here that you want to let people know about?
No, just I appreciate everybody who's listening at this point in the season. It means you are more interested in fantasy hockey than you are in fantasy football, which I know is ramping up right about now, and I have, you know, minimal involvement in, but looking forward to talking to you all on the Discord and doing the regular Short Shifts episodes this year.
Yeah, really excited to get that ramped up. For those of you who are new, once the regular season starts, that's when our podcast feed is actually like really cooking. Like Brian and I have tried to keep things fun with a few great guests like Jeremy during the off season. Also awesome show with Peter Harling a couple weeks back talking about the draft. But yeah, once we get into the regular season, we're just going. We got a Short Shifts on Tuesday, a Short Shifts on Thursday. Then Brian and I record a mega show Sunday night, usually Saturday. I record a matchup maximizer, which talks about the schedule for the next week. So you just will want to make sure, just, you know what, do it now. Subscribe to Keeping Carlson, you'll be all ready. And also, we have a lot of fun shows coming up once we start getting towards the end of August, which isn't that far from now, right? Every preseason we do a Schmore goalies board where we put all of the goalies into tiers. We've started introducing a charcuterie, which is a similar show where we put our defensemen into tiers. We usually have a show, and I assume it'll be the same. We're going to get Dom Luschishin on to talk about his and Shayna's rankings and projections that they always drop from The Athletic. I'll do a show with Victor Nuno where we'll talk about Calder candidates and he'll give his list. I might be forgetting another like classic show, but anyways, we'll make sure to do all the classics in September. And then before, oh, of course, there'll be the tier one auction draft, the couple draft, live draft, where we go on for like 4 or 5 hours, commentating on everything going on for that exciting draft. So yeah, make sure to subscribe to Keeping Carlson. If you want to support us, check out our Patreon, keepingcarlson.com/patron. You can come into our Discord, get mock drafting, register for the couple for next season. It's going to be an awesome year. And if you want to compete with the best and brightest types of people that are caring about the NHL schedule for next season at this point, then that's the kind of league that you should be in. So you can check out kkupfl.com for more info. That's linked in the show notes as well. Thanks for listening. Thanks again, Jeremy. We'll see you all. You know what? I don't know. Like, there'll be another show in the next week or two. So stay tuned and we'll try to call. If you're a patron, you know, in the episode discussion channel, let us know if there's a particular episode you'd like to hear, you know, a particular topic, and we could dive into it. But also, if you're just like coming back now, check out the backlog of the last few shows we've done. We've had a really fun offseason. I think we did Green Boys, Red Boys. Every year we do a couple episodes looking at the players who kind of fared differently in the first half and second half. That's still very much relevant, so you can check that out if you haven't yet. But I'll stop babbling. See you all. Good luck in your mock drafts. Don't snipe me. See ya.